Ugh, Greg, we gotta throw out these Twinkies. See, they're expired.
That's the pack date. That's when they packaged them.
All right, well, what about that date?
That's the sell-by date. It's information for the store. It has nothing to do with when you can eat it.
Okay, well, what about that one?
That's the use-by date. It's just an estimate of when it passes its peak quality.
Twinkies have a peak quality? Okay, how about this one on the side?
That's the freeze-by date. That's basically a reminder that you could freeze the Twinkies and keep them a lot longer. But why?
Okay, and this one?
That's the enjoy-by date.
What does that even mean?
Nobody knows.
This date says sustain human life by?
Well, that's new. That means if you find these during a zombie apocalypse, you can eat them right up to this date. And it'll probably be better than getting really hungry and tired and letting the zombies catch you.
Yeah, we're having a zombie apocalypse right now, Greg.
Put this sticker on your sweater.
Do not eat or bite after September 4th? Oh, yeah, sure.
Zombies are very fussy about that.
They're going away. Of course, if we had a food dating system that made any sense, we wouldn't be having a zombie apocalypse right now. And that's the idea behind today's show. And now, he spent the morning eating expired Pop Rocks and flat Fresca. I guess they weren't that stale. Colin McEnroe.
I'm okay. All right, so we're going to talk about expiration dates and all the other things. I mean, you know, our introductions, as most of you probably know by now, are highly fictionalized. That one was probably less fictionalized than many of the ones that we've done. Right up to the point the zombies come in, we're dealing more or less with reality. There even are foods that are stamped with a date, with a date that says enjoy by. Like, what does that mean? There are a lot of different terms that are used. And on the other hand, of course, you're just trying to make sure that you use food that's usable and you don't throw out food that's usable, but that you don't also eat food that will make you sick. You would think that would be a relatively easy thing to convey to people, but somehow or other, it is not. And that is what we'll be dealing with here today. And we're going to start. Well, first of all, let me just say, as we go along here, you may have questions. You may have comments. You may participate if you're listening live here in the afternoon. Our number is 860-275-7266. You may not call us from the future. You can only call us from now. 860-275-7266. You may tweet us at WNPR Colin. We're going to start with Emily Broad-Lieb. She is the co-author of The Dating Game, How Confusing Labels Land Billions of Pounds of Food in the Trash. She's a lecturer on law and clinical instructor, as well as associate director of the Harvard Law School Center for Health, Law, and Policy Innovation. She's joining us by phone. Welcome to the show.
Thanks so much, Colin. I'm happy to be with you today.
So just for starters, I think, you know, most people kind of do fall into the category that I just described. They don't want to throw out food that's usable. They don't want to eat things that are going to make them sick. How easy are those two things to achieve under the current system?
That's a great question. I think you're right that that conversation is not that uncommon, which is, I think, why so many people have been really paying attention to our report. I think that the main thing that consumers don't realize under the current system is that these dates are not safety dates. They really arose out of consumers' interest in knowing about the freshness of products. And so they're a manufacturer estimate of when they're going to guarantee that the product is at its peak quality.
And so the risk that you take if you eat something after that date is that somehow or other you won't be experiencing the peak quality?
That's exactly right. And that's part of the problem. I think people have forgotten that these were intended to be freshness and quality indicators. And what we saw is over 90% of consumers say that they throw food away on the sell-by date because they're afraid of getting sick and not realizing that this is just a quality indicator. And in fact, according to food safety experts and the National Food Lab, they can't find one incident of people getting food poisoning or foodborne illness from eating a food that was expired or had been on the shelf for too long.
I mean, we're talking about shelf foods, right? Obviously, meat and things like perishables, immediately perishable things like that fall, I assume, into a different category.
Well, I think even with those perishable foods, the date really isn't linked with it. There's not been any scientific testing. And I think the other really important thing to remember is that these dates aren't regulated at the federal level at all, with the exception of infant formula, which is required to have a use-by date in order to ensure that the formula has the same nutritional content as advertised on it. So even for those products, the date isn't telling you anything that is really magical. It's an estimate, and foodborne illness comes from contamination of the product. It doesn't come from it sitting someplace for too long, especially when with meat and things like that, you're going to cook them.
I guess there's also then the risk that people placing too much faith in the expiration date or the use-by date, sell-by date, whatever it is, they look at that date and they sort of see it as this bright line. You know, I can eat it before that. I can't eat it after that. Obviously, probably the greater risk is you're throwing away a lot of perfectly good food. But I suppose there's also a risk of people eating things that they think that they're safe just because they fall before that date and they're ignoring some other factor.
That's completely right, and that's something we really tried to bring up in our work. You know, for the limited handful of foods where there is some sort of risk, and just to, you know, put one out there that is risky, it's deli meat, sliced meat you buy from the deli. There is risk with those things, and the longer they sit around, the more that risk increases. But consumers don't know that. So, you know, let's say you are one of the more thoughtful and less wasteful types, and you realize over time that the date doesn't matter on different foods, and you start to ignore it. Well, then for those handful of foods that do really have a risk, if you're not storing them at the right temperature, if you're leaving them out on the counter overnight or leaving them in a hot car, then actually you're creating risks for yourself that, you know, I think people just want to trust the date. They want to have they want to just say, oh, the date's going to tell me when I'm going to be safe, and that's not true.
We're talking to Emily Broad-Lieb right now. She's a lecturer on law and a clinical instructor and associate director at the Harvard Law School Center for Health, Law, and Policy Innovation. As we go along here, we're going to talk to Frank Green. He's director of food and standards for the Connecticut Department of Consumer Protection, and a little bit later also Jonathan Bloom. He's the author of American Wasteland, How America Throws Away Nearly Half of Its Food and What We Can Do About It. Our number, as I said, 860-275-7266, 860-275-7266. As we prepared for this show, Emily, I also started to realize there isn't just sort of one government agency that, once again, provides a date, a bright line that you can draw on any item of food, right? It's more of a thicket of different kind of competing agencies.
Yeah, definitely. At the federal level, as I mentioned, there's no real regulation on this. There are two agencies that have the power to regulate it, and that would be the Food and Drug Administration and the U.S. Department of Agriculture, which they both have oversight for different types of foods. And they're just not really using it right now in this way, which I think further bolsters our point that this isn't a food safety issue. It's a quality issue. And so those agencies that are concerned with safety are pretty much ignoring the dates. What's happened instead is that the states around the country have decided to step in and regulate. And what we found is that 41 states are requiring date labels on different foods. And there 9 states don't have any requirements or rules around putting dates on foods. But even within those 41 states, they're completely different. As one example, you know, New Hampshire regulates dates on cream but not milk, and Alabama regulates dates just on grade A milk, and some states say the date has to be a certain number of days after pasteurization, but they're, you know, one state says 17 days and one says 12 days after. So I think it further shows that there's really no kind of rational food science behind this, and in fact, we're making it really confusing for consumers.
And it's not even just state to state, although obviously that would be very confusing for someone who moved, you know, having gotten used to the ways of one particular place. But it's even municipality versus state, right? Baltimore has different rules than the state of Maryland?
100%. Yeah, Baltimore regulates dates on all perishable foods, and Maryland only regulates dates on milk. So it's true. It's even within that. And again, because the state regulations aren't really that scientific, we're leaving the bulk of the decision making around these two manufacturers to decide what foods should have a label, what date should be on there, how they decide that date, which mostly is done through consumer taste testing and, you know, quality measures. So it's a real mess.
You know, one of the things that I always assumed, to whatever degree I thought about this at all or knew anything about it at all, which is a relatively low degree, but to whatever degree I thought about it and maybe heard little splinters of what we're talking about right now, it struck me that, oh, well, probably companies want me to throw something out sooner because so I'll go buy a new one. So they make up some expiration date, you know, so I'll turn it over. But the sense that I get in doing more of the reading is some of this confusion is kind of counterproductive for the company, for the food companies too.
That's definitely true. And that's actually one reason we're really hoping that consumers and companies and, you know, the federal, you know, Congress and agencies will come together around making a change. What we found in terms of the issues for companies, there's really two big ones. One is, according to an industry study, they found that in 1 year, they had to throw away $900 million worth of food because that food had passed its expiration date. And that's a ton of food, and they can't make up all that money just by charging higher prices for things. So they're, you know, they're losing good, you know, values for that they could be, you know, revenue that they could be getting. And then on top of that, what we saw is that states are changing their laws all the time. In 2012, four states passed new expiration date rules, and companies have to spend all the time and money to monitor those and have someone checking when those new rules are coming out and then change their equipment and relabel and have different packaging lines for different states. So there's a lot of cost on the industry side, and there's also been a lot of concern on the industry side about the rising rates of food waste in America and how they can, you know, rather than being the problem, be contributing to the solution.
You know, I want to go back to this whole sort of use-by or sometimes literally enjoy-by date that does appear on food sometimes. And so what we're talking about is the idea that yes, if you use this canned product or jarred product or something like this by this certain date, you'll have the peak food experience. And so, I don't know, this goes back to 1924. Maybe they've gotten a little bit more sophisticated about how they engineer all this stuff. But there's a book by James Collins called The Story of Canned Foods, published in 1924, where a grocer put on a luncheon in which he served the contents of old cans and new cans side by side without telling the guests which was which. Among the test foods were 14-year-old pea soup and beef stew, 12-year-old corned beef and pig's feet. The guests preferred the old cans by an overwhelming majority. And actually, more recently, somebody did a similar kind of test with aged sardines and canned hams and had a similar result. I mean, there's no even real guarantee. I mean, the only thing that they're really saying is it's going to taste a lot better if you use it by such and such a date. But I mean, some of that's fairly subjective, I would guess, Emily.
I think you're completely right that it's subjective. What they're doing, for the most part, there's really no, even in those states that say you have to put a label on these foods and you can't sell these foods after that date, they're not telling the manufacturers how to set the date. So what manufacturers do is they'll do some taste tests and find out where the majority of consumers, you know, still think that that food tastes really good, and then maybe even set the date a few days before that to make sure that just in case it's, you know, your refrigerator's not cold enough, you're still going to like it. So I think you're right that it's really subjective. Many of us might like things that taste a different way, and I think that's why a lot of it does come down to this sort of common sense of taking the extra minute to smell the milk or taste something and having, you know, from the consumer point of view, that there's this confidence that you're not going to get a foodborne illness. If it doesn't taste good, you won't eat more of it, but you won't get sick from that.
I mean, a lot of times these things are done, these assessments are made at food companies by a trained sensory panel, people who've, you know, who first of all are super tasters or something like that. They actually are people who can discern pretty small differences in taste, you know, and then they have that natural ability, and then they've honed it through training. So the idea that you're going to be able to tell the difference between the spaghetti sauce that's past the use-by date just because they can is probably quixotic. Let's sort of talk about one or two more of these dates. The sell-by date, which is often pretty visible to the consumer. And I can say as a consumer, I look at the sell-by date, and I certainly don't buy anything that's past its sell-by date. Why would I buy something that's past its sell-by date? But what is the sell-by date? What does that mean?
Well, I think, you know, you're hitting right on one of our two kind of main recommendations in the report, one of which is The sell-by date is really was intended for manufacturers to communicate to retailers and to say, retailers, if you sell this food up until that date, consumers will take it home, and if they eat it in a few days or in a week, they're still going to get good value. They're going to get good quality. They're not going to be running back to you and saying, my food didn't taste good. And the sell-by date is one of the ones that really concerns us the most because there's those extra days or week, you know, that the food could be eaten, everyone who throws food away on the sell-by date, or every store even that throws food away on the sell-by date rather than, you know, sending it somewhere else, is wasting all those days that that food could still be good. And so one of our key recommendations is that sell-by dates aren't the dates that should be used on the product. We're not saying products shouldn't have a date, but it should be something that's intended to communicate with a consumer. So the sell-by date, again, it could just be hidden in code for the retailer to use or just replace with a date that consumers can really use to their benefit.
While we're talking about all this, let's add somebody whose job it is to enforce some of this stuff. Frank Green is Director of Food and Standards for the Connecticut Department of Consumer Protection. So, Frank Green, welcome to the show. Thanks for your time. And give us a sense. What does your job entail in terms of the things we're talking about right now, so-called expiration dates? What does the state get involved in, and how involved do you get?
Well, you know, I mean, expiration dates are nice to be on call. I guess I should say that first.
That's okay.
But you know, it's basically dating is a quality standard for the most part. You know, it's set in terms of like when the quality is at its peak. You know, as your other guest was saying, in Connecticut, we adopt model regulations promulgated by the National Conference of Weights and Measures. And basically, it's not mandatory for most foods. It is mandatory for dairy foods. And we also adopt by reference federal regulations in terms of infant formula. But for the most part, for most foods, they don't have to date it, but if they do date it, they have to date it they have to use a particular format in the dating. And basically, foods are kind of categorized into perishable foods, semi-perishable foods, and long shelf life foods. And you can use a sell-by date for all three categories and a best used by date for, say, semi-perishable and long shelf life foods. So, I don't think in a nutshell if you understand all that.
Yeah, and so does consumer protection, I don't know, do you go into stores and make sure they're doing that, or do you act on complaints or outbreaks of listeria? I don't know. What point do you begin to care about all that?
Well, it's not illegal to sell. It is illegal to sell an out-of-date product. It is illegal to like, if you have a date on, it's illegal to obscure the date mm-hmm. if it's past the date, and, you know, that there should be a prominent display that saying it's past the sell-by date, but it's not illegal to sell past the expiration date. Like I said, it's a quality standard for the most part.
Mm-hmm.
And what we typically look for is organoleptic deterioration, which is like a fancy way of saying, does it smell? Is it rotted? Mm-hmm. You know, is it bad? You know, I mean, is it? You know, and then there are exempted items, say like fruits and veggies that you can. You can select yourself in the grocery store. You know, you can pick them up. You can see if they have soft spots or brown spots or whatever and choose not to eat them. You know, there are things that they kind of look like they're older but are acceptable, like meat. I think your guest was kind of talking a little bit about meat.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there is a problem with deli meats with certain bacteria. But say like Hamburg, there's an enzyme in meat called myoglobin. It's like hemoglobin, and it captures oxygen, releases oxygen, and over a period of time, it sort of breaks down and deteriorates. Since we get that brownness on meat, if you've ever seen that,
mm-hmm.
the meat's entirely good, and you can cook it up, but no one's going to buy brown meat. So
the problem kind of solves itself. Not that it's really a problem if the meat is safe, but the people kind of do this with their own eyes. They make their own decisions. Hey, Emily, while we have Frank here, do you have sort of, as you sort of looked at it, what does it make sense for states to do? Is what Connecticut's doing kind of what you'd like to see them do, follow the standards from someplace else? As you were suggesting before, it gets kind of confusing if states start promulgating, as more than 40 of them have, a lot of different rules that don't conform to one another.
That's a great question. I actually do think in a lot of ways, you know, but I'm sorry, is it Frank?
Yes, Frank, yeah.
Yeah, what Frank said that Connecticut is doing is following these model regulations put out by the National Conference of Weights and Measures and the National Institute of Standards and Technology. It's a mouthful. But they've put out these model regulations. I think 9 states or maybe 8 states have adopted them, and some have adopted an older version. But what we definitely would recommend for states to start to converge around some similar rules. The one thing with those model regulations is that they still allow for a lot of different language. And I think the one thing we would really like to see changed is that there is a, you know, one or two terms that are used and they're standard, so they should be unambiguous. And again, as we talked about, if the main goal is to communicate quality, they should be very clear. Peak quality by, best taste by, and not have this whole hodgepodge of sell by, best by, use by, enjoy by that consumers are, you know, trying to understand. Just have one term, and for that small handful of foods that might have some safety-based reason that you would want to be careful, it should be really clear. Safe before, you know, use for safety, use before, something like that. So I do think Connecticut's on the right track, and we would hope more states will start to become more similar to one another, but we would love to see that national model regulations be even a little more strict in terms of you know, using common terms that everyone can learn.
Frank Green, I know you have to go. Anything we're leaving out? Anything you want the people of the Connecticut to know about the Department of Consumer Protection's approach to this kind of labeling?
No, I mean, basically the NCWM is a consensus organization, so, you know, anybody who wants to can participate. You know, if you have a good idea, or if you want to put forth an idea, you know, anybody can. Just have to contact the executive officers of NCWM. They're in Nebraska. If anybody's interested, they can call me, and I'll let them know the contact information.
All right. We'll try to get that up on our website, too. Thanks so much, Frank Green. Frank Green is from the Connecticut Department of Consumer Protection. Emily Broad-Lieb is with us. In just a few minutes, we're going to add Jonathan Bloom, because there's a lot of other questions about this, like what upstream and downstream, particularly upstream, what are the consequences of all this? If we're wasting a lot of food, throwing a lot of food that isn't really expired, what's that doing in terms of our production of food and the resources we use for the production of food? And also, what can we do with the food that is sort of currently being wasted, food that is quote-unquote expired but not really expired? And Jonathan's book has a lot about that. So if you have questions for either of these guests, for Emily or for Jonathan, give us a call right now at 860-275-7266. That's 860-275-7266. Why don't we take a break right now? We'll come back after this. The milk could go so sour. You spit it out into the kitchen sink. The carton said refrigerate. You read the expiration date, but you knew it ends up heading to the landfill. Wonder if you last your prime the exact amount of time. All right, so I just want to quickly say, relevant to this is a program we're doing that you're invited to come to on October 2nd. That's next week. It's Wednesday. We're doing, it's not exactly tied to this, but it's close. It's called a program on ethical consumerism. The whole notion that, yeah, you with your purchases, whether you're going to a restaurant or at the supermarket or buying any consumer product, really, often do want to take into account your own attitudes about worker rights, labor, environment, climate change, animal rights and animal safety, all that kind of stuff. But how successful are you at it? How well does that work? Are there better ways to think about all this? Is there an even bigger, better way to think about this? And our guests are going to include Bun Lai, who runs the most sustainable sushi restaurant in America, Barry Nailboff, who's a professor of management at Yale, but also the founder of Honest Tea, a soft drink company, which set out with a whole bunch of pretty high-minded ethical goals about how it was going to operate. I think in all of the spheres, except maybe animal rights, I don't know what they have to do with iced tea, but in all the other ways, they wanted to do the right thing there. Bun, Barry, also with us, David Bollier. David Bollier is kind of a really interesting guy, a big thinker who basically collaborated for years with Norman Lear, of all people, on all kinds of really interesting public affairs initiatives. These days, he's thinking a lot about what he calls the commons. The commons is, at least in this context, a sort of a larger way of looking at this whole process, maybe in terms of which parts of the means of production and things like that we might want to even kind of take back for ourselves instead of depending on the ethics of others. I hope I'm summarizing his thoughts right. And Stephanie Winook, I hope I'm saying her name right. She's from a group that looks at, it's actually, I'm blocking the name of it, but she's from a group that looks once again at sort of the integrity of products upstream and downstream. Is there any kind of good model for disposing of them? What kind of things are they made out of? Anyway, you're invited, 7 p.m., Watkinson School. You can get tickets at Watkinson.org. Find out more about it at Watkinson.org. We'll also be trying to turn parts of the show into a radio show, so you'll be invited to participate. There'll be a mic passed around so you can ask questions. It's going to be a lot of fun, part of a series we call Freshly Squeezed. So take everything that we've talked about today and then bring it to Watkinson on Wednesday night. We'd love to have you there at 7. Emily Broad-Lieb is with us. Going to add Jonathan Bloom in just 2 seconds. Emily Broad-Lieb is the co-author of The Dating Game, How Confusing Labels Land Billions of Pounds of Food in the Trash. She can only be with us for a few more minutes. Very quickly, let me just grab, because I sort of think it's worth hearing from people who have different experiences here. Here's Tom calling in from Madison. Hi, Tom. Hey, Tom, are you there? Do you have a question?
Yes, my wife does a lot of baking, and she finds that when a lot of ingredients, in particular like canned milk, over the expiration date, it just doesn't work on whether the cake she's making or whatever. So she watches expiration dates as far as what it does to the recipe that she's preparing.
But see, Emily, that sounds pretty much like what you're saying. In other words, Tom's saying that certain products like baking powder, baking soda, I'm thinking he's talking about things like that, don't perform quite as well if they're close to or past their sell-by date or other kind of expiration date, which is kind of what you're saying. I mean, if you're worried that it's going to poison you or make you sick, that's a completely other different set of concerns.
Exactly. I think that's what's really important for people to figure out for themselves. So if you find that something doesn't work or it doesn't taste right, then it's perfectly fine to make that decision. But you're right. No, you're not going to get sick from it.
One of the things I know you looked at, and this will be a great place to add in Jonathan here, but one of the things you looked at is how much, we talked a little bit about how much it costs big food companies to follow these rules and react to changes in the rules, to be throwing out a lot of stuff. How much does it cost the average person? How much are consumers wasting or giving up every year in terms of food that they don't eat that they could?
That's a great question. We don't have really good data in the U.S., but we know that from a study in the United Kingdom that all the household food waste, so all the things you throw away because they are really bad or you don't finish eating them, 20% of that is just because people are confused over over the dates. So things that are perfectly good, perfectly safe, people threw them away because they didn't understand. So I think if you apply that in the U.S., then it seems like people could be throwing away up to about $450 of food each year that's perfectly safe, perfectly good quality.
All right, let's add Jonathan Bloom to this conversation. We've got Emily for a few more minutes. I'd love for them to be able to chat back and forth. Jonathan Bloom is the author of American Wasteland, How America Throws Away Nearly Half of Its Food and What We Can Do About It. Jonathan Bloom, you've been listening to a lot of this conversation. I alluded to it, but I didn't get very far into it. One of the other big concerns is not just how much money this costs an average household or how much money this costs the people who make and sell food, but really sort of what it's costing us environmentally to make so much food that nobody eats. These are all finite resources that go into this. And I know it's something that you looked at pretty carefully. So give us a picture of that. What's the environmental impact of wasting food?
Well, sure. Well, thanks for having me. So there are so many natural resources that go into producing our food, namely energy or oil and then water. And so when you tally that up, they found that about 4% of all U.S. energy consumption is embedded in the food that does not get used. And looking at the water used to produce food, it's about 1/4 of all our fresh water use. So there are those resources there, not to mention the land use and loss of fertility of soil, and then globally some of the biodiversity loss that we see happening when we cut down forests to produce more food. And then on the other hand, when we then toss out so much of that good food and it ends up in a landfill, that food is decomposing and producing methane, a greenhouse gas that is aiding climate change. And so those two factors combine to make our food waste a real significant environmental impact. And And then that's not even getting into some of the ethical concerns that happen when we throw out as much food as we do.
You know, I'm going to ask both of you how studying this affected you and the living of your own lives. And Emily Broadleib, I'll start with you. Since you got interested in this, since you began looking at this whole question of food waste, specifically food waste tied to confusing labels, how has it changed the way you live your life, how you shop, how you maintain your pantry?
That's a great question. It's one that actually sort of strikes a chord with me because I've been working in this field for more than 5 years, not with food waste, but with food policy and looking at the laws and regulations around the food system and how we can have a better impact and make healthy food available to more people. And I was really embarrassed that I didn't know that much about this topic before doing the research for this report. So I'm sort of making up for lost time by being really careful now. And, you know, we just ignore the dates completely. Everything in my cabinet, in my pantry, in my refrigerator, we taste it, we smell it. If it tastes and smells fine, then we use it. And we've been completely fine. So I think you're right on that. It's really opened my eyes being part of this work.
Jonathan, a lot of the answer to my question is in your book. You have sort of a lot of reflections about sort of what's going on in your house as a result of all this. I should say, even as I say this, I'm getting emails from, I think his name is Jack, who is drinking expired orange juice while he's listening to our show. But Jonathan, just once again, in terms of sort of just the finely grained aspects of your own household life, how are things different?
Well, certainly since studying food waste, I've had my eyes open to just the impact, and that helps me be more careful in not buying too much food, especially when I'm out at the supermarket or at a farmer's market. But in particular with expiration dates, I always tended to scoff at the dates a bit, and I used to fancy myself a bit of a daredevil because I was sort of eating things after they had supposedly gone bad. But since learning more about the issue and especially seeing it in the broad light of day in Emily's study, then it's kind of been amazing to see that I actually was not all that daring. And in some ways, it makes me feel justified in eating the food after that date. But I'm a little bit disheartened that I'm not quite as bold as I once fancied myself. And so by eating things after the supposed expiration date, then we aren't really taking our lives into our own hands.
You know, as we go along here, Jonathan's going to tell us a little bit more about what can happen to some of this food that ordinarily is wasted. But Emily, before you go, maybe it's sort of the last question, and maybe we already explored this, but I'm not 100% sure. Do you feel as though, I mean, obviously we have a problem that there are too many confusing standards. The labels don't really convey a single message. They don't draw the kind of bright line that consumers want, even about something like freshness or peak quality or whatever. Do you feel as though that we have enough information about food to be safe? Obviously, a lot of these labels don't have anything to do with safety. They don't convey anything about safety. I guess I'm sort of wondering, you know, we talked about the fact that you could wind up eating food that's dangerous for you, even though it's well before the so-called expiration or use-by date. Is there something else the government needs to do to ensure the actual safety of food?
That's a really good question. I think the key thing to keep in mind is the issues that are causing unsafe food in the food system. And I will say our country, we're doing a lot. There's reform underfoot, too. I think some of the things that are causing us to be unsafe are completely external to the dates. And I think what we really were fearful of is over time, as younger generations get more and more used to seeing dates on all of their foods, you know, they don't remember that, you know, 30, 40, 50 years ago, there weren't dates on anything, and everyone was fine. They used their senses to make a decision about the food. So we have this younger generation, they're used to seeing dates, and they hear things in the news about foodborne illness outbreaks. And I think that they, in their minds, are putting these two things together. And what I really think is important is to remember this system was created to help address freshness concerns of consumers. It hasn't done a good job of that at all. And in fact, people think it's about safety now. And we really need to change the consumer perception, but I think we also need to as a country and as consumers and people who care about waste and about, you know, food issues, push for a better system in the future.
All right, Emily, that's a really great answer. And thanks so much for joining us. I know your time is limited, so we're going to move on here. That's Emily Broad-Lieb, and you should read The Dating Game, How Confusing Labels and Billions of Pounds of Food Land Billions of Pounds of Food in the Trash. We got some people calling up with questions. We're going to have, whoops, I actually have just put the wrong person on hold. I just put Jonathan on hold and Emily not on hold. There, now I've done it correctly. We're going to take some questions here. Jonathan will answer some of your questions as we go along. Our number, 860-275-7266. 860-275-7266. Jonathan, one of the things you did in your book is you sort of tried to really kind of visit a lot of different points along the food continuum. For example, you worked, I think, for about 3 months as an entry-level employee in a supermarket, which is kind of where the rubber meets the road about all this stuff. It's where, at least in terms of what we're talking about today, it's how people, it's where people decide what they're going to buy and how long they think it's going to last. What did you find out there?
Yeah, well, my first day of work, before I even got a name tag, my boss pointed me to the wall of refrigerated produce, the cut vegetables and fruit, and he told me to start pulling any bags that had a sell-by date of that day. And I didn't really know what would happen to that food, but I had a vague sense. I was kind of hoping that there might be an alternate use for those food items, but after I had pulled everything, he told me to then throw it out. And these were bags of lettuce and cut cantaloupe and carrots and things like that. And they're perfectly good at that very moment, but they had that sell-by date of that day. And so to me, that was a nice introduction to how much waste is occurring in supermarkets across the country just through those superficialities.
All right. I'm going to grab some calls here. We do want to talk, particularly during our third segment, about, because Jonathan really has also explored a lot about what can be done to reclaim some of this food and get it to some of the people who need it. One of the more recent studies I read said 15% of American families are, quote unquote, food insecure, at least at some point during the course of the year. So it's kind of crazy that we're throwing out perfectly good food. Let me grab a call here from Bill in West Hartford. Hi, Bill.
Hi there.
You're on the line. You're on the air.
Okay. All of the food dates that are being addressed are for sealed packages. What happens to the dates once you open the package?
Jonathan, I don't know if you can speak to that or not. I mean, we probably actually should have some real health and safety credentialed expert answer a question like that one. But what about that? You open a jar of something, and does this, I assume the clock does start ticking, although I also assume it's between those temperature points that Emily was talking about.
Yeah, well, I can play armchair scientist here. So once you do open a package and expose it to air, then it does expedite the decomposition of that food item. So the clock does start ticking once we open an item, but it does vary from product to product. So for example, with that bag of spinach or lettuce shipped from California, they pack those bags with what they call modified atmosphere or some various gases that help keep our food crisp and prevent the decomposition. So yeah, once you do open it, things start to go bad slowly, as nature would have it. But the dates, they're meant to take into account that kind of normal use of a product.
All right. We're talking to Jonathan Bloom right now. His book is American Wasteland, How America Throws Away Nearly Half of Its Food. Cindy from Stanford, you got a question that's going to send us right down the road we want to go on. We'll take a break. We'll come back. We'll go down that road.
Tell me, baby. You're going to eat all of that.
Ugh. It says on the label good until October 21st. Again, maybe it's me, but does this clown smell funny to you? Today's show was produced by Patrick Scahill, Betsy Kaplan, and me, with help from our interns Jonathan Scranton and Garrett Connolly. Voiceover help in the intro by Greg Hill. The part of Bill Curry was played by Strom Thurmond. Tomorrow on The Nose, a tale of using sandwiches to bargain for love. And now, back to Colin.
Actually, Strom Thurmond is mentioned in Jonathan Bloom's book. I'll let him tell you in just a second here. Jonathan Bloom's here with us. His book's American Wasteland, How America Throws Away Nearly Half of Its Food and What We Can Do About It. Do you want to mention once again, October 2nd, please join us at Watkinson School, 7 p.m. We'll be talking about some of these issues, although it's a little bit more about the kind of the ethical decisions you make as you buy. We have great guests. This is open to the public. We'd love to have you there. Check out Watkinson.org to find out more about tickets, or you can email me at Colin, C-O-L-I-N at WN. NPR.org. Jonathan's here. We have a question from, or perhaps a comment from Cindy in Stamford, which is kind of get us right where we want to go anyway. Hi, Cindy.
Hi, Colin. I want to say that your guests have really hit on what I think are very, very good messages that need to be changed going out on this topic. And just to give you a little background, and I have one thing I do want to talk about, but I started working at a women's shelter when I lived in Washington, D.C., and a battered women's shelter. And, you know, having 100 frozen turkeys delivered at Thanksgiving doesn't help.
Mm-hmm.
And so I started going to the grocery stores to take the dairy because, of course, you know, the women had children in these shelters, and what they really needed was dairy. And that was the way I kind of got involved with this because there was such a need. But I wanted to bring attention to the listeners about a program that I had heard on another NPR station about the fellow who had been the former president of Trader Joe's, a guy named Doug Rausch, and his new initiative in Boston called The Daily Table. And what he's doing is he's taking food that is expired or close to being expired, he's repackaging it into prepared foods and preparing to sell it into the inner city to be able to compete with fast food and be able to get people to understand, you know, that they can, you know, that there are alternatives to fast food, and he's going to try to show that it can be done in an economic way.
Yeah, we've been reading a lot about Doug Rausch, too. Cindy, the great point. Thanks for talking about that. Jonathan, this is the kind of thing you cover a lot in your book. Really quickly, I mean, one of the more fascinating programs or ideas even is called Replate, which is sort of similar. Talk about Replate.
Yeah, Replate is this idea of getting people to take their leftovers from a restaurant and put it to better use, give it to a homeless person, or actually leave it on top of a trash can. And so there's some eyebrows raised from a food safety standpoint, but I think it has a useful purpose in raising awareness on the excess inherent in our day-to-day eating, especially at restaurants.
I mean, you really looked at a lot of different efforts to do kind of second harvest things, to sort of take some of these things that seem to be not sellable but usable and get to them. And we did have a Strom Thurmond joke that was just said. There is actually a law that was signed by Bill Clinton, Strom Thurmond, and Newt Gingrich, among other people. Everybody agreed on this one idea, right, which is, correct me if I'm wrong, it has to do with limiting the liability of stores and other entities that donate.
Yeah, I'm so glad you raised that topic. So the Bill Emerson Good Samaritan Act, it's probably the one thing that everyone could have agreed on in the 90s. And what it did was establish a freedom from liability for people who donate food that they deem to be in good shape. So when there's a will to donate food, there's a way. And people shouldn't be trotting out that same old excuse of they're worried about being sued, because that's a bit of an urban myth. And I keep asking people whenever they say that if they've ever heard of any kind of lawsuit like that, and no one that I've spoken to has been able to come up with one yet. So what that law does is it allows major corporations and supermarkets and even growers to donate food that's edible but unsellable. And that's happening nationwide. It's not happening enough. It's not happening in a widespread basis as much as I'd like to see. But there are plenty of people doing that, and Food Share and Food Not Bombs are a couple of groups that are recovering food that is otherwise going to be thrown out and then putting it to good use.
What community, are there communities, are there places in particular, you just mentioned two organizations, are there places in particular that are doing this kind of thing well, cutting down on waste and getting this food that is not sellable but usable out into the world?
Most of the major cities in the U.S. are doing a good job. There are a bunch of major nonprofits, and in particular, Washington, D.C. seems to be a hotbed of food recovery, and Cindy mentioned that she worked at a shelter there, and so she probably experienced some of that repurposing of food. But the one thing that I would want to add is that we're in this position now where we can't just be worrying about getting calories to people. It's about getting the right kind of calories. So there's a traditional hunger, but then more and more these days we have a nutrient hunger where people aren't getting the nutritious foods. And unfortunately, a lot of the retailers in the U.S. want to donate some of their unhealthier foods. Everyone wants to give their day-old bread and cupcakes and pies and things like that, but fewer and fewer want to give their dairy, their proteins, and their fresh produce. And so that speaks to a need for nonprofit organizations to really push on those particular items. And it also has started pushing some of those food recovery organizations to grow some of their own and to prompt community gardens, which has been a really neat process.
All right. Well, I'm going to grab one more call here. If we have time, we'll talk about school cafeterias, which are a really interesting part of Jonathan's book, and where you will be unsurprised to hear a lot of food gets thrown out because the kids refuse to eat it. But anyway, here's Joan in Waterbury. Hi, Joan.
Hi. I'm just calling because I had always heard that as long as meat, for instance, had ice crystals in the middle of it, it was okay to eat. During the last few big power outages in Connecticut, there were public service announcements on TV, radio, and the internet saying that if the power to your fridge had been out for, I can't remember what they were saying, but it was a relatively.
It was like 24 to 48 hours. You know what, Joan? I'm thinking maybe neither Jonathan or I were really totally qualified to answer that question. And I wouldn't want you to get sick and then blame us. But we'll try to find out a little bit more about the actual health and safety science of that. Unless, Jonathan, you do want to play armchair scientist again.
No, probably best to trust your local experts.
Yeah, okay, really quickly here. We only have like 60 seconds left, but which is not enough to talk about this. But school cafeterias, obviously a lot of food gets thrown out because the kids don't eat it. Is there anything that can be done about that? Has anybody figured that one out yet?
Yeah, we need to have more choice, allow more choice in what students take. So if they're just given a tray with everything on it, they're going to, surprise, surprise, not eat a lot of that food. Anyone who has kids knows that vegetables and fruits aren't often that popular, although sometimes they are. So that and a lot of milk, unfortunately, unopened cartons of milk ends up in the waste bin, and it seems like there should be a way around that. The other thing is moving recess to moving the order of lunch and recess so that kids go out and play and then work up a hunger and then come in and eat. And when it's the other way around, they tend to waste a lot of their food because they're just so focused on getting outside.
All right. Listen, Jonathan Bloom, great to talk to you. The book is American Wasteland, How America Throws Away Nearly Half of Its Food and What We Can Do About It. Today is Thursday. That means tomorrow is Friday. That means we've got The Nose. Jim Chapdelaine and James Hanley and Carolyn Payne will be joining us for The Nose. Do want to mention one last time on today's show, October 2nd. We'd love to have you there. We will also be opening up the floor to questions. Some of those questions will get on the air as part of a radio show we'll do about this. It's about ethical consumerism. We have a fabulous, really kind of an all-star our panel here, and both I and our show and the people at Watkinson School would love for you to come. Get to Watkinson.org today and see how to get tickets. But the jury's still in doubt. Well, I can sit and wait. But my show, oh, I tell you everything. You know, I tell you anything. You know, I didn't have anything to say. And even if I did, it'd be too late. Let's just say expiration day. Let's just say expiration day. Expiration date. This is the expiration.
and Kyone Wolf on a carton of eggs, there's an expiration date. Spoiler alert!